WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here on WSB Radio. We have just, again, how often do we bring guests in, Ryan Ealy? Not often. And once in a while, we'll do that. And this is the kind of environment where politics are the biggest mystery that we have, that they have been in a generation. The economy continues to try to break out of the quicksand, but can't quite break out of the quicksand. And as you could imagine, as an investment advisor that I do, that's kind of my real job or my day job, as opposed to just radio and media stuff, this is something that I need a lot of help on. So there are important economic updates that come out several times every single business day we are alive. I refer back to my economic acronym so that I can quickly remember what's going on in the world. We talk about the economic chime, consumer spending and confidence, housing, inflation, interest rates, manufacturing, employment, and earnings. Those are all the variables that come together and determine whether we're moving forward as an economy or we're going to go backwards or we're about to go backwards. And then, of course, that relates back to how we do as investors and what the stock market does. So, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here on WSB Radio. If you want to find me and the Money Matters team, easy to do so. WesMoss.com is my website. And, of course, you can also find podcasts of radio shows over the last several weeks. Today, special guest, special treat, as we have this, call it late spring, early summer interview series when it comes to politics and the economy. Today with me, really the chief of all chiefs when it comes to research, which is Jason Trenert of Strategus Research Partners. Jason, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me here, Wes. Good to be on.
You guys, and again, I'll just thank you over many years that we've utilized research from your firm, as you guys have grown a lot over the last decade or so.
We're trying.
And again, you guys are quoted in Barron's almost every weekend. I would think at some point they got to get sick of you guys and use somebody else.
We're hanging in there. So for some reason, they keep coming back.
The one of the reasons, and again, so today with Jason, we're going to talk about, as you're the, what do you call you? The chief research strategist?
Chief
investment strategist.
Yeah.
And you have a background in, of course, economics and individual. Did you do individual securities back in your early days?
I never did, Wes. I've always been really on what we call the macro top-down side. So I've always either done economics or investment strategy. I go down to the sector and industry group level, but don't go any further than that. But always focused on the economic, macroeconomic picture.
Now, once in a while, you'll throw your hat in the ring for a political prediction, which you did about a year ago.
Right.
And the Wall Street Journal just this week came out and said, hey, wait a minute, this Trenert guy, he might know something about politics too, because you had this cool handwritten chart.
Right.
Back almost a year ago that said something about Trump being under-owned. Explain that to our listeners.
Yeah, so this was it was last August, and I think Donald Trump exhibited to me all of the kind of standard characteristics of a momentum stock that people kept shorting, and they kept just going higher. And so people kept betting against it, it kept going higher. So last August, I wrote a piece called Donald Trump is Under-Owned. And it was actually after I had been to two political luncheons in New York City where I happened to see Mike Huckabee and Rick Perry and all the kind of the Republican, I would say, elite there. And no one was taking Trump seriously. And then I spent a lot of time. They had the soccer moms. I'm a lacrosse dad. So I spent a lot of time on the sidelines of my kids' lacrosse games. And I'm telling you, you're talking to the other fathers there, this guy was catching on. And it was, I think I live in Manhattan, one of the occupational hazards of living in Manhattan is that you're not really in the real world. And
you are truly on an island.
There's an island mentality. But if you're going out into the tri-state area and you're sitting on a lacrosse field talking to other people that aren't in finance or aren't in politics, it was clear that he was underowned.
Well, and it's still, to some extent, he still is. Because
absolutely.
And we've, of course, one of your partners, Dan Clifton, who we talk a lot about the policy, it's still, the odds are still heavily in favor that Hillary will continue to be ahead.
Yeah, we did a survey in both March and in April. We'll do one here again in May. But 70% of our clients, so they're institutional investors like yourself, think that Hillary will be the next president. Only 30%, less than 30%, believe that Donald Trump will be. To me, those odds are off. I think what Trump is capturing, I think particularly from an economic perspective, is the idea that there's a lot of things that elites have told them are good for them, whether it's free trade or open borders, that are not so good for, that they
that may not be so
that
good.
May not be so good for them. They say, you keep telling me this is good for me, but
I haven't seen it,
and so the stock market's higher, but
that doesn't do everyone.
Doesn't do everyone that much good.
Yeah. Well, let's go through a macro view then of the economy. You did a piece recently. You called it the good, bad, and the ugly.
Right.
And you related it also back to a spaghetti western.
Sergio Leone. He did all those spaghetti westerns.
Well, I think it's because you're an Italian guy, too.
I am.
Tell our listeners what a spaghetti western really is.
There were a series of westerns that were made by Sergio Leone, who was an Italian director. And they were called spaghetti westerns because he was Italian, but they were the good, the bad, and the ugly for a few dollars more, and they, so Clint Eastwood starred in a lot of them. They had a few Italians, so Claudia Cardinale, beautiful woman. She was in a couple of them, Eli Wallach. They were fantastic. If you ever get a chance to see them, they're great western flicks, but it was mainly because Sergio Leone was the director, and a lot of the production people were Italian.
It sounds like we should have been doing this WSB McDonald's weekend prize pack. That's what we're going to start asking is the name of these westerns, spaghetti westerns. Well,
spaghetti westerns.
Let's go good, bad, ugly. So let's start with bad news. So we'll start with what you see, and this really goes back to, so there's this challenge that investors have right now. The challenge today is we're trying to find income, and with rates at these unbelievably low interest rates because of the Fed and because where we've come through the Great Recession. Number two, we're trying to find growth for companies that still struggling to grow. And our economy is so dependent, of course, and the economic numbers are dependent upon productivity and, of course, jobs, and then where wages are going, inflation. So that's really what you're going to cover here, and I know that's our conversation in these three categories. So let's start with the ugly. And we're, I guess, to some extent, the worst areas of the economy and the stock market that you see right now, kind of the biggest problems.
Yeah, the biggest problem really is that I think we have a very inefficient policy mix. And I'm a free market guy, I'm a Republican, and so I tend to think that markets do better at allocating capital than people. But if government is going to help, they can help in four ways. There's monetary policy, there's fiscal policy, there's regulation, and there's trade. And right now you have a very odd mix because you have very easy monetary policy, easy money from the Fed, and you have very tight regulation, also from the Fed and a lot of other Treasury Department, other agencies. This goes back to the irony, I think we were talking about before, is that if you're a saver, it's not particularly good development for you, or if you're not already wealthy, to have easy money doesn't really do much.
Doesn't really help.
It's like filling up the gas tank and not having it be connected to the engine. So what we call the velocity of money is actually, despite the fact the Fed has tried very hard to push money into the system, the velocity of money, the amount of money that actually gets back into the economy, has actually gone down since 2007.
So meaning that if you spend a dollar on a housing project and then those workers then go and spend that dollar again, it's how many times the money actually turns over.
Turns over.
And with a low velocity of money, money's not getting out there, working its way into the
system.
That's
right. And the great irony, again, is that it's helping probably... It's helping, if you could say, the wrong people. It's also encouraging the wrong types of behavior.
So you mentioned, though, in that ugly category, A, thrifty 50, so stocks, this kind of big 50 stocks in America, and then dividend growth. How does that relate to this ugly area?
Yeah, well, the ugly is really kind of referring to the, that was really what I just talked about, was really the bad. The ugly is kind of like the football analogy, which is to say it's you got to win ugly to make money from the market here, which is to say it's going to be hard for the market as a whole, in my opinion, to give you big gains just by being invested in the, I know there's been a big focus on indexation, but in my opinion, it's very hard to rely on that to get good market gains from here. You're going to have to win ugly by having more specific strategies. The Thrifty 50 you talk about, they're companies that are really, they're the safest companies in the United States as determined by what we call the credit default swap market. And not to get too technical, but it's a market-based way of determining who are the safest companies.
And we've talked that about here on the show.
Yeah,
our listeners have probably heard us talk about low credit default swap prices means it's cheap to insure a company because it's not going out of business.
Right.
If it's a really costly insurance policy, that means the patient might not be that healthy.
Right. So these are the companies that have the lowest insurance premiums against default. There's 99 companies in the U.S., if you can believe it, that have lower credit default swap spreads that are cheaper to insure than Japanese government debt.
Wow.
So these are companies that are very safe and are good proxies for bonds.
Let me hold that thought. We're going to go quick news, weather, traffic. We'll be right back. You're listening to Money Matters. We're talking with Jason Trennert from Strategus. So we're talking about a big macroeconomic view of the world, the good, the bad, the ugly. If you want to get in touch with me and the Money Matters team or have a question that relates back to this interview with Jason or just your own question in relation to your own planning and investment strategy, give us a call or just email me. You can go to wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com, contact button upper right-hand side or right there in the middle. That email form comes right straight to me and Ryan Ely, the producer of Money Matters. Stay tuned. More Money Matters right here on WSB. Straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss. Here interviewing Jason Trennert, Chief Investment Strategist for Strategus Research Partners, a firm that gives independent research that we rely, we put a lot of stock in what they do and their work. Jason's here with me today talking about, we call it the good, the bad, and the ugly, kind of a proxy for old Westerns filmed
right
on a cheap budget in Italy. We were talking about, this is in the ugly category, so we're trying to battle low interest rates. So dividend growth, you mentioned, is something that is a part of that way because bond yields are so low. Is that what you're?
That's it. I think that you're right now, and as we may know, 10-year Treasury yields are 170. So you're lending the government money essentially for 10 years at 1.7%. You can buy a lot of very high quality companies that have dividend yields far in excess of that and are likely to grow the dividends and also give you the potential for capital appreciation. So from my point of view, the risk is much greater in the bond market than it is
in
the stock market, especially for dividend paying stocks and especially for high quality companies that are likely to grow them in the future.
We just did this screen this week at our firm, Jason, and there are 280 stocks right now in the S&P 500 that yield higher than the 10-year Treasury, which I don't know historically if that's ever happened. Is it ever been such a big divergence?
No, certainly not in the past 30 years. It may have happened a little bit last year, but this is very, very different.
This is a rare occasion. We're going to continue the conversation. You are tuned into Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss. More with Jason Trennert, macroeconomist, chief big fish at Strategus Research Partners. More of this straight ahead.
Now back to Wes Moss with the money and investing advice you need.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning. Take your calls, questions. Once in a while, we'll do an interview only if we can land a fascinating guest. And we did today, Jason Trennert, who's the chief investment strategist or officer at Strategus Research Partners and a real resource for Ryan Ely and I and our whole firm, the whole Money Matters team. We buy research from several different companies, independent research companies. Strategus happens to be one of our favorites, and they just do a wonderful job in a lot of different areas. So we get macroeconomic research, we get fixed income research, we get policy research, And then we're talking with Jason today about how all that folds in economically. So, Jason, hey, thanks for being here with us.
It's my great pleasure. It's
really
great.
Really appreciate it. Number one. Number two, we were just talking about the Fed's kept rates low, and the 10-year Treasury, which I remember for many years, particularly studying economics and being in business for almost 20 years, the 10-year Treasury is usually around 4%. Called 4.5% is what you would lend money to the government and get every year. Today we're at well under 2,
right,
meaning that you're only getting 1.75% for 10 years out of a Treasury bond. Ironically, stocks and stock dividend yields, which are usually far less than the 10-year Treasury, have gotten to the point where over half now of the S&P 500 is yielding more just on a yield basis than bonds or the Treasury.
That's right.
And has that ever happened?
It's really never happened before. It only started to get a little bit close where you had over 50% of the stocks in the S&P 500 yield more than the 10-year Treasury in the last 4 or 5 years. And it's never been as high as it's been now.
And what's the average? What is it?
The average was before this year was more like the low, maybe instead of 55%, it was more like 12 or 13%.
Okay, and just to clarify to our listeners again, what Jason and I are talking about here is that the S&P 500 today, and let's round these numbers off, yields around 2%,
right,
as a group. Historically, only 12% of stocks in the S&P 500 have a yield, a current cash flow higher than the 10-year Treasury. That's the 12%.
That's right.
And today it's way higher than
that. And Wes, just to, you know, I just took a look at this while we were chatting. Since 1950, the average 10-year Treasury yield has actually averaged 6.7%. Okay,
so it's hard to even
in the 1990s, it was 6.3%. In the last decade, the 2000s, it was more like what we were talking about, 3.5% to 4%. So, you know, it's this is a brave new world, but you also have to think about it versus inflation. And so if you're lending money to the government now at, let's say, 1.75%, inflation's about 1.75%. So you're not making any money in real terms. You're barely just keeping up with what inflation is. So it's not a particularly good deal, and I think it's very, you know, potentially risky. I think stocks actually are much more attractive than bonds for savers, especially dividend paying stocks.
So if we go, so the ugly part of this, good, bad, ugly, is that rates are low, and you've got to find, and monetary the policy of the Fed hasn't helped the country necessarily as a whole. It's helped certain segments of the population, but not everyone.
No,
it's kind of, your analogy, I think, is awesome, which is you can fill the gas tank up as much as you want, but if it's not connected to anything, it doesn't help.
That's right.
The bad part of this is that we've got, again, policy isn't necessarily working, negative interest rates around the world. What about the good? Is there any good?
Well, there is. I mean, there is good that what's the good? The good is that is good of not being bad. I don't think the U.S. economy is close to recession for the next year or two.
That's a big deal. That's a firmly in the good category.
That's a firmly in the good category. I mean, it's the absence of a bad, but we certainly get a lot of questions from again, their institutional investors who are very worried about recession. We don't think it's likely because consumer spending is still robust, and believe it or not, the government spending is helping out. There was a budget that was passed at the end of 2015 that's going to start lifting economic growth this year in 2016. And I think regardless of who's president, I think there's going to be more of a focus on some government spending next year. And I know some of your listeners might not like that, but it has to be balanced, in my opinion. If you're focusing too much on central banking or monetary policy, that's not good. So if you have more government spending, that's probably not so bad.
So again, you're saying that the banks can't just make money readily available, because if nobody's borrowing it, it doesn't stimulate the economy. So you've got to have some government spending,
right?
Which goes back to that old economics formula that we all learned early on, which is really government spending and consumer spending and business investment spending and net exports is what really makes the whole ship run.
And I would say you're a small business guy. I'm a small business guy. I would, and we know something a little bit about this from recent dealings. One of the other things that would be very helpful, in my opinion, would be regulatory easing.
Wait, give me this is the one I can tell you. The one I've said this on the show before. If a well, I guess Trump, he can say whatever he wants and he keeps getting better in the polls, but Republicans have a difficult time articulating to the general population really what gets hurt through regulation. Overregulation really means what?
Well, I'll give you an example from a banking system because it relates directly to what we're talking about in terms of monetary policy. So the Fed has done a great job of expanding their balance sheet of trying to make all this excess liquidity available. At the same time, the federal government is putting enormous restrictions on banks. Now, you might say, that's good. I mean, that's, you know, they deserve it. By the same token, it doesn't do any good. It doesn't do you any good if you're regulating almost out of business the same banks, the same institutions you're relying upon to lend money. So the average FICO score of a mortgage written in the United States last year was about 755.
755.
Okay, so that's in the excellent category. So again, it goes to the idea that there's plenty of money available if you've got money already, but there's not much money available to you if you don't, and that's why it's not working. And so this, to me, regardless of who's president, this is largely government doing well by just getting out of the way.
But they have not.
As a matter of fact, we've gone the other way. There is enormous opportunity, in my opinion, for the next president, whoever that is, to ease up. And so the monetary policy would be much more effective if we were accompanied by easier standards, I think, on banks.
I want to get to, there's so many questions I have, but I want to get to something that I think is also tremendously fascinating. We just talked about how the market itself, stocks in general, particularly you call it the Nifty 50 or the Thrifty 50, where we're talking about large cap companies that are perennial dividend payers, high quality companies. But so there's not necessarily overvaluation there, particularly relative to, hey, I can go buy bonds or I can buy stocks, I can buy real estate. Relative in those three categories, stocks, and I guess if you add cash, a fourth category, stocks are actually still relatively a pretty decent.
I think so.
Best house, maybe bad neighborhood.
Right.
But then there's this private world, and we hear about this, but our listeners probably don't, our listeners aren't investing in these private companies. So they're not invested in Uber. They're not invested in Airbnb or Snapchat or SpaceX or Dropbox and so forth, or Lyft. But where is is there a bubble somewhere?
Yeah, well, I think your listeners, if they're not invested in those things, they should be happy they're not invested in those things right now, at least. I mean, they should be happy that they don't have the opportunity to buy them now, because there might be a temptation to buy them now. They're trading at very, very high valuations. It's what a lot of people have called the unicorns, and they're largely tech-based Silicon Valley companies. There's been an enormous increase in private equity capital, which is capital that invests in private companies. They aren't public companies. That's why a lot of your listeners can't buy them. That whole world has gone mad, in my opinion, in terms of what some of the current valuations are.
So how crazy is an example?
Well, so, I mean, you think about Uber. I mean, what do we have there? $65 billion valuation, something along those lines. That puts it it puts it way ahead of a lot of other companies that have been around a long time, that we know are going to be around a long time and aren't facing a lot of some of the other headwinds that we have. And so, you know, for my opinion, I would be very careful. I'm sure there's some people that are listening to your program that may have private investments in some of these, but you know, you have to tread carefully.
But again, these are areas of the world where if this bubble pops, Is it such a small sliver of the population and instant big institutions or private equity firms that it's not going to be quite like a 1999.com bubble meltdown?
Well, certainly for the average person the average person has actually been selling publicly traded equities for the past 6 or 7 years since the financial crisis, which in my opinion is a mistake. The good news is that if this bubble bursts,
say that again, the average person is selling public?
Is actually been selling mutual funds, equity-oriented mutual funds. So, it's
redemptions.
Remarkable. Redemptions. So you've had you had the market go up for 7 years, and most people have been sitting it out, or putting money in bonds. And to me, that's where the risk is. On the private side, because of that, they're not going to get hurt very badly if this blows up. The places that might get hurt, though, are actually some of the pension funds, endowments, foundations that have been buying this stuff.
That so many of our listeners are relying on, because that's where their monthly pension checks come
from. That's right.
All right, we've got to run to quick news, weather, traffic. Find me in the Money Matters team, yourwealth.com or my website, wesmoss.com. Email me, upper right-hand corner, those emails, questions, concerns, you name it, they come straight to me and the Money Matters team. Straight ahead, we'll wrap up here with Jason Trennert on Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Have yourself a Bluebell Country Day.
Look for Bluebell Ice Cream, available at Publix, where shopping is a pleasure.
Make a good decision how early to leave to get to work on time. Monday with Atlanta's Morning News. Triple team traffic coverage every 6 minutes. And the days will hit 80 in Kirk Mellish's five-day forecast. On News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning, 9 to 11. We've had the privilege today of talking with Jason Trennert, who is one of the founders of Strategus Research Partners out of New York and D.C. and Geneva. And we've relied heavily on Strategus for their objective insight to the economy and the world. Jason, we've talked about the good, the bad, the ugly. I guess the takeaway I'm getting from you is that even though all this policy from the Fed isn't doing a whole lot, there are opportunities out there.
Right.
And the good news is that recession isn't necessarily imminent.
That's right.
The scary conversation is that we see a bubble in private technology companies, Ubers, Lyfts, Airbnbs of the world, but you don't necessarily see a bubble in big publicly traded equities.
No, I think, and that's largely, it's very different than, you can see why average people have sat out the bull market over the past 7 or 8 years because of their experience in 2000 and during the financial crisis in 2008. The problem, though, of course, is that you're fighting the last battle, and right now, the market's not that cheap. But it's also not very expensive, and stocks, I think, are much cheaper than places that people think are very safe, like bond funds. I would argue they're potentially very risky. Stock funds, particularly high-quality stock funds, I think are far less risky now, and they're particularly not risky because the average person hasn't been involved.
And you know that through mutual fund flows, right? We can see money coming in and out of particular asset classes.
Right. So this is actually over the past 7 years, you've had net redemptions. So it's very different than 99 or 2000 where people couldn't get enough.
And now that people are acting still pretty nervous.
Actually still selling.
Yeah. Jason, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
It's a treat and a pleasure.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks.
If you would like to find me more about this interview, you can download it as a podcast at some point. Well, I'll have it on wesmoss.com or just shoot an email to me and the Money Matters team. Easy to do so. I've got a new website. And if you want to comment on that too, the jury's still out whether it's working or not, or I like it or not. The email form upper right hand side or there's a button right in the middle, Ask Wes. Those emails come straight to me, and you can schedule time to meet with me or the Money Matters team, or just ask a general question and we'll get back to you. With that, enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Thanks for listening to Money Matters right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.